everybody, to another episode of Bub in the Bloom, episode 164. We're coming at you on a Tuesday night. We're going to recap the 2025 Too Early Meatball DC that we started last Wednesday night. We previewed it last Tuesday, drafted 11 rounds last Wednesday with 13 other degenerates like us. It was a ton of fun. We will recap our teams and much more to hopefully get you a little excited for the 2025 season. We'll also recap some news, listener questions, and much, much more. Before we get excited and talk about all that, you can find me on Twitter at BDNTrick, the podcast at Bubba Bloom Pod, and my co-host, as always, on Twitter at RyanBHQ. Ryan Bloomfield, how are we doing, my friend?
Fantastic. Been an awesome day. Got some family in town, so I took the day off and played 18 holes, got plenty of sun, played well. The stroke, I must say, is getting dialed in for first pitch Arizona on November 3rd at the Bubba in the Bloom Invitational. So look out, my friend. Look out.
I'm looking forward to it because hearing you talk like that, it's going to make – I might actually have to learn how to clip things. Let's put it that way. Because when we reconvene that following Tuesday on air on our opposite offices – if you don't play so well on Sunday, do not think I will not remind you of that multiple times.
You gave me the reverse treatment already, calling me a sandbagger from 2 years ago. So why not just lean into it the other way around this year?
Yep. I agree. It'll be fun though. I'm looking forward to it. Been a big way. Golf on Sunday, FPAS, the schedule starting to come to form. You got the Thursday through Sunday schedule for anybody that's interested in going for the whole week. Tons of fun stuff. I'm giving the cliff notes version. Ryan usually does a lot better at this whole production, but it's going to be a fun week as always in Mesa, Arizona is where the hotel is located, but Scottsdale, Phoenix area, as we all come to enjoy that time of the year.
Two months away.
Yep. It's going to be here before you know it, as they say, but all right, before we get in to the too early recap, we already have a couple guys in the chat. Keep it coming tonight. We'll have some fun there. My Uncle Ted, Burks, Michael C, A. Cates. Evening, everybody. Going to be fun. Awesome. Cates is making his first trip to FPAS this year or next year. So, yes, we hope to see you there too. Michael C, I know, is in that conversation as well. So keep him coming. You won't regret it. But, all right, let's talk some news here. Robbie Ray hits the IL with a hamstring injury. Jordan Hicks went to the IL also. That's not as relevant. But Robbie Ray to the IL with hamstring injury. There's no timetable yet for his return. I haven't even heard a grade to the strain yet. It's been pretty bleak on that front. He's obviously out for at least 2 weeks. I'm guessing it's more like 3 to 4 weeks. This becomes a very tough decision, Ryan.
Does it? I'm not sure it does. I'm not sure it does. I think Robbie Ray is it. You hold if it's a minimum IL stint, which would put like September 10th, I think, is when he'd be eligible to come back, but that's obviously a best case scenario. And like you said, Bubba, we don't really know what the degree of the strain is, which also probably isn't good news if we are reading between the lines. I kind of got hosed on this one. I don't know about you, but I have Robbie Ray in a few teams and wasn't sure if he'd hit the IL or not at lock. And I left him in figuring, especially on some draft and holds, figuring even a zero might be better than some of the other options that I had, but whatever, you live, you learn. But yeah, I think if you have Robbie Ray in a fab league, unless you're plush with bench spots or IL spots or whatever, I think you really any pitcher at this point, unless they are elite, I think you gotta cut bait with only four more fab periods left.
That's fair. I'm hoping we get some more information by Sunday. I just want to hear the grade. Give me a grade to the strain, and I'll have a much better idea on when this return could potentially happen. But I agree. If it's going to be more than the minimum, it's probably hard to keep that one intact. Would you rather hold Robbie Ray or take a chance on Yu Darvish?
I'd rather take a chance on Yu Darvish.
Okay. Well, here's a guy you can drop. Nick Lodolo hit the IL with a left middle finger strain. Literally flipping the bird, everybody, on the way out. Nick Lodolo. They're saying likely out for the rest of the season. They didn't flat out say that, but going to miss a bit of time is the terminology, which to me means why is he coming back for a team that's out of it? So Nick Lodolo can go by the wayside here. Any other thoughts on this situation?
No, Lodolo. I mean, Lodolo struggled big time, had like almost a 10 ERA over the last month. Yeah, 9.75 ERA over his last five starts. You wonder, I don't think this was like a snap injury. We wonder, you know, has this been bothering Lodolo for for a little bit. Who knows? But yeah, Lodolo's out. I guess your former boy, Jacob Junis, entered Junis into the Reds rotation.
Pitched well on Tuesday.
Yeah, I think went like 45, 47 something pitches. Don't think we can recommend Junis unless you're super desperate. A, because probably won't go five innings, and he's a low strikeout guy anyway, and pitches in one of the more hitter-friendly small parks in baseball. So, I don't know. Kind of a disappointing year for Lodolo, but
the one that's going to be interesting, because Hunter Green's likely out for the year as well, as that news keeps following farther back. Julian Aguiar is a guy I'm interested in just because he limits damage. He went six innings, two runs in his last start, four Ks. He's made two starts here both on the road at Toronto, at Pittsburgh. Toronto's not a walk in the park these days. In the minors between AA and AAA this year, 3.79 ERA, 95 strikeouts and 116 and a third innings pitched. So not a massive strikeout guy, but a limit the damage guy is kind of the way I interpret this one. And if we look at just his AAA starts, Aguiar's made nine AAA starts. That's a 4.4 ERA with 41 Ks and 47 innings pitched. So any interest for a guy like Aguiar? Is he strictly deeply only? Is he strictly a matchups guy? He's going to get a chance to pitch the rest of the year, is what I'm trying to say, for the Cincinnati Reds.
Yeah, I think I'll give this one the old, I'll be nice and say, if you're in a 10-team NL only, Julian Aguiar is rosterable. I don't know. The minor league numbers are what they are. And two starts so far for Aguiar, has not missed bats, hasn't really thrown many strikes, and has given up fly balls over 50% of the time, which, again, in that park is not great. So I'm not too interested in Aguiar.
All right. Kevin Hastings joins the chat. I want to give kudos to Kevin as his Kansas City Royals. As he mentions, he got caught up with a couple Royals fans group threads as the Royals tied the Guardians for first place in the AL Central. As of now, they get a first round bye. So look at those Royals. Bobby Witt pushing for second place in the MVP, but trying for a playoff spot at the same time. So,
and hoping that Cole Reagan's injury is minor. And I guess they said it was just a cramp. So you saw the headlines. It was like Cole Reagan's leaves start early. Earlier this week, but it sounds like it was just cramping. So good on the Royal. That's going to be a fun ass race. The Twins aren't too far behind either. So
no, thanks to Matt Wallner. So it's pretty good over there. people need to watch the headlines these days, because otherwise you get Dr. Dave in trouble. So they need to be really clear if it's just a cramp and whatnot instead of out for the season. Wilson Contreras, this one, I pretty much already dropped Wilson this past week where I had him, unless I had an IL spot like in Tout, because everyone has an IL spot. Wilson Contreras, fractured finger, but the news got worse on Monday. They said Wilson Contreras won't even begin baseball activities for 3 weeks. So if you do quick math, folks, he's probably not back till the second to last week of September at best. So please drop Wilson Contreras.
Yep, please drop Wilson Contreras. You think it's
the question's who's taking the spot,
right? I think it might be a kind of a 50-50 split.
Yeah, I'm not too invested. I picked up Páez in Tout where I had Wilson because there's no one available there. Yvonne Herrera is the better offensive player, but it seems like it's a 50-50 type deal. So hopefully, you have better options like Adrian Del Castillo or somebody, because Joey Bart's on the IL also with a hamstring injury. So that was a bummer. That dropped about half hour before Fab on Sunday night. So some caught it, some did not, unfortunately. Henry Davis got recalled, though. Henry Davis, looks great in AAA again. Stop me if you've heard that before, Ryan. What are our thoughts on this? Because I think I'm going to laugh when Yasmani Grandal plays every day.
Grandal's heating up a little bit.
Exactly. That's why I'm going to laugh when Davis comes and sits the bench.
Yeah, I mean, Davis kind of has, I don't know, what I like to call like Jordan Beck syndrome, great in the minors. But then once that switch goes to the majors, it's not there. But I feel like at some point with Henry Davis, things will start clicking. When that happens, I could not tell you. But I also think, every catcher thing is kind of a timeshare at this point when the starter's knocked out like this. So, I don't know. Davis, if you're desperate, but maybe even a 50-50 share with Grandal.
Yep. I think Grandal could be interesting there, to say the least. But check your wires. Maybe Travis Darnold's out there, like Uncle Ted's saying. Maybe he's not, because Sean Murphy's gotten even worse as the season's gone on. So it's another one to keep an eye on. But some fun stuff going out there. A lot of every time I do my my news and notes, it's a lot of guys getting pushed up, pushed down. It's all over the board right now. It's a wild time out there in the waiver world. Last one here, Xavier Edwards hits the IL with a back injury. They're hoping it's minor, so keep that in mind. So hopefully he's back sometime next week. I'm just crossing my fingers with the whole back injury situation. Fidel Bruhan will be the primary shortstop with Xavier out, and Counter Norby's leading off with Xavier Edwards out. So any other thoughts here? Like, I'm holding Xavier Edwards for now.
Yeah, I think you got to hold Edwards because even, you know, 2-3 weeks of Edwards, given what we saw from him pre-injury, I mean, that was some game-changing stuff in terms of batting average and stolen bases. Norby at leadoff is interesting. I mean, the minor league numbers are with a different organization with Baltimore, so I want to see if Norby runs, but did steal 13 bags in AAA for Baltimore this year. If the Marlins give Norby a green light and he continues leading off, that is awfully interesting, especially at a position third base that isn't conducive to speed. So crappy for Edwards, but Norby, the playing time is much, much safer than it was with Baltimore. And let's see if they run him.
Yeah, Norby, since joining Miami on the 19th, dude's been pretty, pretty good, as they say. He's hit safely in every game. He's got a hit on Tuesday night, so hit safely in 8 games now since joining the Marlins. Couple home runs, stolen base. Pretty productive guy out there. Got a question in the chat here from Beanable. We give Jack Leiter a stream tomorrow versus the White Sox? What are your thoughts? Because I have mine. Very, very easy thoughts here.
I'd give you a stream tomorrow against the White Sox. So yeah, yep. I'd do that.
I picked Jack Leiter up a lot of places for a buck this week, especially in deeper formats where there was not a lot of pitching available. Jack Leiter was an option for me. It's going to be a doubleheader because they started the game like Garrett Crochet pitched 4 pitches and then a rainout. So the White Sox did the most White Sox BS thing on the planet, because I actually picked Crochet up for like $2 this week. Going, if there's ever a week to use him, is to get eight innings and maybe 10 Ks and ratios. This was the week to do it, and it just completely went. The White Sox'd it. This is the nicest way I'm going to say this right now. And that was very, very frustrating. But the Rangers did announce Leiter will pitch. I believe it's going to be game 2. I imagine they keep Heaney because the game started. So the game continues. I think Heaney has to start, is the way I would imagine that. And then Jack Leiter would pitch game 2. So, yeah, I would definitely start Jack Leiter to answer that quick question. All right. You ready to recap some meatball drafts?
Let's do it. I don't know how dead the horse is that we're beating at this point. I know both you and I have gone on a mini
made the rounds.
Yeah, mini podcast tour since our last episode. I was on Friday with Derek Van Riper and Rates and Barrels. You were on with Eric Halterman on Sunday, RotoWire.
Sunday, RotoWire. Yep.
And then you'll be on Fantasy Feud this week as well with Sarah Sanchez and Shelley Verstrate. So we are making our rounds, but we figured since we are both in the draft, and hopefully I've got the board up for our YouTube crowd or anyone that views this on the YouTube channel. You may have to full screen this thing just to see all of the picks. I know that makes our faces bigger on your screen, which probably isn't a good thing, but we are working within the constraints of a screenshot here. But we do have the board up. Props to Ryan Roof, who manually created this board, who was in the draft of RotoWire, and of course Rob DiPietro, who organized these shenanigans as well.
And for 165 picks, we drafted 11 rounds. Ryan Roof only had 5 players he did not create a sticker for. That's
impressive.
Pretty impressive.
It's easy to look at a board of a draft after the fact and just see names and like, that's cool. Roof, I think, made 300 potential picks,
something like that. Yeah.
300 potential stickers, and only missed 5 out of 165. Like that may be the most. I feel like we should give Roof like an extra pick, like at the end of the 7th round, a little supplemental for all the work that he does with this thing. But no, it's a great job.
Yep, awesome stuff there for sure. So we'll talk about our teams first, and then we'll kind of navigate some other thoughts that we have on this draft. So there's 15 teams, obviously. And Ryan got the 3rd pick in the draft. So, Ryan, we'll start with you first in this, and we'll go through your team. But I know we talked about on the preview, you know, you're thinking Ohtani, Witt, and then it's like, okay, do you take Judge? You take Ellie? You had a lot of questions, and you ended up on
Aaron Judge. Sir Judge. The more I thought about it, it kind of wasn't really a consideration for me. Judge has been so good. $50 player, top three guy each of the last two of the last three seasons. Kind of, it's funny, after you draft these guys for next year and they keep hitting home runs this year, it's like save it for next year, Aaron. But no, that was a slam dunk for me. The biggest question was, and we mentioned this last Tuesday, given that there is absolutely no ADP, we have zero idea. We had a good idea who'd be available in the first round. We had zero idea who would be coming back in the second round. So really that was my kind of worry. But went with Abrams to kind of neutralize Judge there, get that power speed. But who knows?
Real quick on Judge. I tweeted that out today when I was working on my risers and fallers. So I was looking at weak stats from last week. Judge played in six games, hit seven home runs, walked 14%, did not strike out the entire week, zero strikeouts in six games. And over just six games, Aaron Judge had an exact 1.0 F4 in six games. You know how ridiculous that is? That kind of week of production is just nuts from Aaron Judge. So he's got 51 home runs this year, and that's all on your team because you drafted him this year too. So that's pretty.
Yeah, pretty fun stuff. I said during the draft, it felt better drafting Judge at 15 last year than it did at three this year. But yeah, I'll stick with him. He's treated me well.
All right. So you got your power, you got your speed with CJ Abrams. If Trey Turner was there, would you have gone Trey and had your Judge Trey back to back?
That would have been funny to do that same thing 2 years in a row, but no, I think we talked about Abrams versus Turner last Tuesday, and I almost had to make that decision, but I would have gone Abrams anyway. I don't know how much Turner runs as he starts to get old like us.
All right. So that's nice that you finally said us. That makes me feel better. With your third pick, you took Logan Gilbert. Were you looking to go starting pitching this time around, or was it just because Logan Gilbert fell there? What was your thought process on that one?
Just want some bulk. Just want some bulk, man. Just want some innings. That's the
bumper
biggest
sticker on my car. Just want some bulk.
Just want some bulk. God, I hope not.
Kidding.
I know. It was it's so hard drafting starting pitching in August of a draft for the following March, April, whenever opening day is. I'm just trying to mitigate as much injury risk as possible, especially on the pitcher side. Willing to open myself up a little bit more to injury risk on the hitter side. Not quite as much as you. We'll get to that. But on the pitching side, I wanted to be as safe as humanly possible. I just felt Logan Gilbert, given the age, given the innings, workload, that sort of thing, best whip in the majors. Just hope that the Mariners start scoring some more runs next year. But it was kind of funny. I was in between Gilbert and George Kirby at the 2-3. And John Fish made that decision for me, taking Kirby at the end of the second round. So had no issue going with Gilbert. I was totally fine with that and wanted to grab one of those quote-unquote safer, bigger innings guys at that 2-3 turn. I just feel that's important. I know it's risky with starting pitching this early, but I think you can't avoid it. You can't just go all hitters early. And I mean, this is a draft and hold. You got to have innings. You got to have innings.
Yep, you got to have Angel break down positional stuff later in the show here. But round four, you came back with Marcell Ozuna, and Michael C has a question for us. General observation, are we still doing the UT discount post Ozuna? So did UT factor into this for you? Or are we kind of, I guess, also to this question, are we done with worrying about UT just taking these talented players where they fall?
Yeah, I mean, I mean, we'll talk about kind of the Westberg pick later, but that was one of the things that made me land on him. Having a UT guy, I wanted to get some multi-position eligibility later, and kind of famously, the famous fact of this draft is multi-position guys are few and far between entering 2025. James Anderson, who wrote this draft up and was also in the draft, team four, mentioned that there were only out of the whatever 165 picks in this draft, only five hitters are multi-position eligible. So that makes UT a little bit harder to stomach, to be honest. But Ozuna, I mean, yeah, give me the four categories. I think I'm pretty sure the Braves will bring him back. I think it's a $16 million club option.
That's cheap, yeah,
for Ozuna next year. So I'm quite confident in that. And the Braves lineup next year should be like they're all coming off down years. That should be a freaking awesome lineup again next year. So no, the UT did not scare me really at all.
Yeah, the four UT players taken: Ohtani went number one, Ozuna to Ryan in round four, Kyle Schwarber to Ryan Roof in round eight, and Brent Rooker to Jake Hollisker in round 10. Yes, Brent Rooker is not outfield eligible, folks.
So did you know that? Did you know that during the draft?
I looked it up at one point. I did not know it initially, but I kept wondering why he was falling. So I just there was a couple of players I kept checking things on as the draft went on, and that one surprised me.
So I did not know that at all. Like I'll admit, I'm not going to sit here and say I know everything. There was a chance I could have taken Ozuna and Brent Rooker in the same, in the same draft, and that would have been a complete disaster. Luckily, someone else removed that decision from me. But I had no idea Brent Rooker was UT only. Next season.
Yeah, and as a Cates says, No, that's the wrong one. Yeah. Hates says had to clue me in on Twitter about Rooker. Yeah, it was a bit of a surprise, that's for sure. Michael C in the chat says Schwarber in the sixth, Rooker in the tenth seem like major bargains. They could be if you're looking to enjoy those, especially Rooker and Sack, as Kevin Hastings says. That was a hard one to navigate. I know we were all talking about the offensive environments in Sacramento, but we didn't really know how to, I guess, see where the market would dictate that environment, because even Lawrence Butler went at the 11th round to James Anderson. So I was kind of thinking Lawrence wouldn't even get taken in the first 11 rounds, and I like Lawrence Tucker. So that's fun. Back to Ryan's team, though. In the fifth and sixth, you went with a couple more pitchers. You got Andrés Muñoz because all the relievers were flying off the board at this time. There's 10 relievers taken in rounds three and four, two more in round five. This was one of the two in Andrés Muñoz. And then round six, you came back with your second starting pitcher in Shota Imanaga. So what are your thoughts on these two picks?
I was thrilled with Imanaga. That was a no-brainer for me. The Munoz pick, it's funny, at the time, seemed like a panic because of what you just said. There was a massive run on closers in this draft because mostly I just think there aren't the supply is not there. There are maybe 10, 12 closers that A, are good, B, should have the job next year, and C, aren't free agents. So there were a couple of closers like Clay Holmes that went later. I mean, that's a free agent next year, and we don't know if he's going to sign. So that limited the closer pool even more. So at the time of the Andrés Muñoz pick, it felt like a panic. But just looking at which relievers went after that, there was only one other reliever taken in the next, four rounds.
Yep.
So, I felt like I got the end of that cliff. It kind of depends, what you think of Munoz. He only has, I think, 19 saves this year, which seems extremely low. And there's some uncertainty with Scott Service being gone. Will there be a change? But I'm reasonably confident Munoz stays in the role, and I'm very confident in the skills. So that seemed like a panic pick at the time. I wanted Robert Suarez. James Anderson sniped me on him in the fourth round right before me. But, hindsight,
I remember Anderson in the draft going, like a couple of rounds later, going, God, I can't believe I drafted Robert Suarez in round four. So yeah, closers went crazy.
Yep. Did you get a closer?
Yeah, I got Mason Miller. I was pretty pumped on that one.
Yeah, good. Yeah. Fourth round. All right.
Yep. So what's your thoughts on Shota? You like him as your SP too, apparently.
Yeah, I like him. Innings are there. Innings were there overseas. The one thing I looked at with Shota is the first half or second half splits. Just wanted to see how the skills translated as hitters start to kind of get a book on Shota. Strikeout and walk rates are actually better for Shota Imanaga in the second half than they were in the first half, despite his epic run to start the season. So I'm not really worried about a sophomore slump for Shota. I think he'll be fine. I don't think he's an ace, but I think in the sixth round as an SP2, I think that works.
And I was going to ask this because King went after what King, Sonny Gray, and Robbie Ray were the next three picks. And even Kate's in the chat here says, did you like Shota over King, or is that pick close? I know you were looking at King. I think you're hoping for him for your SP3, but did you have Shota over King, Michael King, pretty easily?
I did. I was actually between Shota and Tanner Bibee, who went two picks before in the sixth round of Mike Mager. So I was between those two. Again, it's common theme, right? Innings,
yep.
Not too old, and somewhat stable for starting pitchers. So I was between Bibee and Imanaga. King is a fine pick as well. I think we've seen from Michael King this year that he can, especially the way he's pitched lately, I think he can handle a starter's workload at this point.
I'm glad to hear you coming around on Tanner Bibee. That is a good thing to hear. Then he came back in round seven with Randy Rosarena. That's a fall from grace from previous season's ADPs for Randy. Production has dwindled this year, as we talked about, but still he's power speeds there and other goodness there. So you went Rosarena. We'll just talk Randy first, then I'll set you up for the haymaker.
I mean, this is just a pure extreme regression play. I mean, Randy Arozarena the last couple of years has been like a rock solid third rounder. Yes, the move to Seattle probably isn't the best from a park factor standpoint, though Tampa wasn't that great either. I just think you're getting a guy who's still in his prime. You're buying him at a price that has never been this low. So fully admit this has been a pretty terrible year for Randy Arozarena, both above and below the surface. But hey, man, people have bad years. I mean, that was my impetus between going Judge Turner at 1-2 last year, and that worked out. So I just think this was the ultimate kind of anti-recency bias play going for Randy. That was, for me, that was a no-brainer in the seventh.
Yep, no doubt about it. Then he came back in round eight, and you got one of the multi-position players, one of the five, in Jordan Westberg, who should be back with the Orioles in a couple of weeks, hopefully, with the broken hand. Second base, third base eligibility. You still seem like you have mixed thoughts in your head about Jordan Westberg. So where are we at on this one, Bloom?
I mean, it's an okay pick, but I just love how you wanted him and I took him from you. So I actually like the pick now.
It would have taken a while to get back to me, but I had him circled for my next round pick. Yes.
Yeah. I mean, that there is risk with Westberg. I mean, we only have those 420 plate appearances this year. He's 25. We had 220 last year. So I guess there's enough of a book on him. Second, third thing was huge for me. And again, with having Ozuna, quote unquote, clogging the UT spot, being able to have some flexibility at middle and corner was appetizing. And then you get a age 26 hitter in that lineup next year. He'll be a good one.
Then you came back in round nine with Cody Bellinger, who's had quite the down season this year. Is this similar to Randy? You're looking for the kind of buy-in on the dip type situation with Cody Bellinger?
Somewhat of a panic pick, I think. I think in hindsight, like, I'd almost rather even have, a Suzuki, who went later in the ninth round. But especially because Cody Bellinger does not qualify at first base. I think he's got like 15, 16 games at first base this year and probably won't get there for next year. So Bellinger is just a jag, just a guy, but he's going to play every day. You know, as long as he's healthy, you don't see him. You know, I don't know where he will end up, but I think he'll be fine. Number nine, and maybe he plays first base and gets that. Cause first base was pretty rough.
It's bad. It's really bad. It's a nice way to say it. And then in round 10, you took the last catcher of the draft, the first 11 rounds. That is 11 catchers, I believe, were taken in the first 11 rounds. So what's your thoughts on Tyler Stevenson? Because I know some people might have been a little surprised by that one.
A couple surprises on that one. A little bit of a growth year for Tyler Stevenson. Great park, powers up, contacts up as well. So I don't know. I wanted to leave this draft with a catcher. I know you didn't. Kind of want to ask you about that, but I think catchers in draft and hold formats, getting guys that are primary catchers playing every day, and Stevenson even plays some other positions to get that volume up. So I don't love the pick, but again, you just kind of need a guy at catcher, and some of the other options. Like, it felt like catcher, it's definitely not as, doesn't seem as strong in that middle class as it was last year. I think that was one of my takeaways from this draft, is that kind of middle group of catchers that was awful bulky, word of the night, last year was not so much this year.
And then with your last pick, you went Yusei Kikuchi. Was this because you wanted a third starting pitcher before we finished the night, or what was the thought process from Yusei at pick 11?
This was about three IPAs in. At this point in the draft, I'm operating with the plunge that Seiya Suzuki post trade has figured something out since he got dealt from Toronto. The pitch mix has changed, fewer fastballs, more off speed, more breaking balls. I think if he finds that mix, he's been one of the best pitchers skills wise since that trade. I know it's extremely small sample, and the innings are there. They have been there. They haven't been the best innings in the world. And that's why it's kind of a surprise pick. I don't love it, but the innings are there. I'm banking on this new version of Kikuchi sticking next year. Don't know if it'll pan out that way, but whatever.
So overall, you've made 11 picks. How are we feeling about things?
Man, I'd give it like a B minus. Okay. B minus. I need.
Where are you looking to improve?
I need like. I need like an infield. You know, I need a first baseman. I have Jordan Westberg. He is my no. I got a shortstop. I'm good.
Yeah, shortstop.
Yeah, I'll move this up to a B plus then. I what really worries me is, but this isn't just my team. This is everybody. Who the hell are we going to take for our second closers in this draft when we restart it in October? Like that worries me, and that's why I. You know, I don't want to say reach for Munoz in the fifth, but that's why I wanted to prioritize an early catcher. So that's probably my biggest fear with this squad is, you know, what is that second closer going to look like? You may very well, when we restart this in the 12th round, be going out on a limb for a closer that might not even have the job next year. I think we picked that pool pretty clean.
Yeah, the kind of locked in guys, there's a few, like, does Camilo Duvall come back? Lucas Irsig should actually keep the role in Kansas City since he's got so many years of control. There's a few of those lying around, but where do you plant your flag will be pretty fun when all things are said and done there. All right. You want to do team eight?
Who's team eight? That's you. Yeah, that's let's me. Do it. You are a co-host on the show.
Yeah.
So am I interviewing you?
Yep, you interview me now.
All right. I'm going to go a little harder. I'm going to go that's a little fine. Harder on you. Why Kyle Tucker over Mookie Betts?
Immediately when I did that, I was texting you going, man, I think I screwed up on that one. I'm just always, it's a blind spot. Just love Kyle Tucker. Love the 30-30 upside. But then again, you got Mookie Betts, who's got that kind of potential in a better lineup potentially. I think Kyle Tucker, we haven't even seen the best of Kyle Tucker yet, obviously, because he hasn't played this season. So I agree. I look back on that one. That's when I could easily have gone Mookie Betts and been very happy with that, especially with the flexibility. A couple more games, he could have second base to go with shortstop and the outfield as well. So that one stings, but I'm still very happy with Kyle Tucker. Yeah. I think it's because I was focused on Kyle Tucker and J-Ram because I didn't think Mookie Betts would even be there at pick eight. And so just in my initial prep, I was just focused on those two and totally missed that whole scenario. And that was a oops on me, and a congratulations to Dom for getting him at pick 10.
Who Dom is in the chat and says he would have gone Tucker over Mookie as well. So take that for what it's worth. And I don't mean to be like, Tucker's a great pick. It's more like, I love Mookie. I was surprised he fell to 10.
So am I, but won't happen in many drafts. I'll tell you that much.
Yeah. Your second round pick was Zach Wheeler. I don't think we need to talk there. Right. I mean, innings, skills, whatever. That's a fine pick. He's my SP3 as well, behind Skeens and Scooble, which were the first two starting pitchers in the first round. I got to ask you about Royce Lewis, my friend. So he fell to the third. Did it feel like a trap that he fell to the third and you were the one who took him? You felt pretty confident when you picked him.
I liked it a lot. The more I saw him falling in this room, especially because Dom said he should have been a first round pick and picked Devers over him, which was fun. I love Royce Lewis here, and especially in a DC format where you can, like, I picked a third baseman later that's a little quote-unquote safer potentially than Lewis. Even if you get 100 games out of Lewis, the depth you have in a DC, you should have two, three, maybe four third basemen, depending on how you build your things out. You'll be able to fill him in and still get 100 games out of Royce Lewis, could still give you 25, 30 bombs and everything else that comes into play. So in a format like this, I'm a big fan of a Royce Lewis, and, you know, God forbid he stays healthy, he's an MVP candidate. Like, I think we can all, well, maybe not MVP, but it's a first round pick for sure in that regard. So I'll take my chances on Royce Lewis in the third round. I was shocked he made it this far, as I kept seeing him fall down the board. I'm like, oh, please come back to me. Please come back to me. I'll take it in a heartbeat. So yeah, I was very, very excited for Royce Lewis. To me, that was one of the first ones that really fell that in this whole draft where I was like, yep, that feels good.
It just seems like a pick you wouldn't normally make, you know, given the way that you draft. I agree with everything you just said. And even so, we'll jump down to your kind of jumping all over, but it made even more sense when you took Bregman in the 10th. I know you mentioned this on some other shows, but just from a roster build standpoint, it made a ton of sense to go with like an Iron Man at third base. Well, Bregman will be your corner, but you've got Lewis pretty backed up solidly. So I know that was by design by you taking Bregman in the 10th. So I get it. That made sense. Anything you want to add there with Lewis Bregman?
Bregman, it's like on the RotoWire, they asked me, because I love Vientos. They said, why did I take Bregman over Vientos? It's more the boring stability. Like, I love Vientos. Yeah. I think the power is ridiculous. Vientos is also, let's figure out a few more strikeouts and he goes back to AAA and Beatty gets another chance. Like, that doesn't, it's not out of the realm of possibility. And then if Royce Lewis gets hurt, I'm in a big problem. So I took Bregman, hits the top of the order in a very good offense and at corner infield, and Lewis at third base. That'd be pretty fun if that lasts most of the season.
Yep. All right, you went closer in the fourth, Mason Miller. And are you, how concerned are you that this dude's A, that this dude's arm falls off next year or later this season, and B, that he actually stays as the closer in Oakland next year?
It is two very good concerns. I hope he stays as the closer and doesn't go in the rotation just because he's so good in the back end. He picked up save 22 on Tuesday night. Injury is always a concern, but we could say that for a lot of these pitchers that got drafted, like in this early rounds. As I was watching the closer run go off the board there, we said in rounds 3 and 4, 10 relievers were taken. Mason Miller was the 9th out of those 10. I think if you just did like a blind poll, I don't think most would have had Mason Miller at 9. Let's put it that way, just on what's going on there. And that could just be my bias there. I love Miller in this one. As the closers were going, I'm sitting there going, okay, just leave Miller for me, leave Miller for me. It happened. I'll take my chance. I made a point to get Wheeler and Miller in the earlier rounds because last year, rounds 5, 6, and 7 was Yuri Perez, Max Scherzer, and Adbert Alzolay. We weren't doing that again. So Mason Miller was my lockdown, quote-unquote, closer. Now, if he loses the role, that sucks. But if he loses the role, I have a pretty damn good starting pitcher, too. So that's pretty fun as well, at least strikeouts and ratio-wise. So something to think about there also.
Yeah, no, that's a good if Mason Miller is not the closer next year, they're not going to move him to like middle relief. It's going to be a starter or closer. So, and if you get starter Mason Miller, that could be really good while it lasts. And I mean, just my commentary here, you did not have a closer come back to you that in the next like 5 rounds that you could trust as a closer one, since Robert Suarez went later in the 4th and I took Munoz in the 5th after Miller, kind of like you said, there was nothing. Question in the chat from Anthony: would you have grabbed Yoan Duran or Helsley if Miller was drafted before your 4th? I guess both those guys were gone.
Yeah, they went right before, and they're the two closers that went before Miller. I would have taken Duran, and then I would have gone Robert Suarez. I like Helsley. Helsley's been amazing this year. I think we're seeing Helsley's best season, and I'm not paying for that.
Career year. Yep. Career year. All right, 5th round, Willy Adames. We love... I won't finish that sentence. We like guys named Willie on the show. What was your deal with Willie Adames?
Well, this was an interesting one because, like, I love Zach Neto. He went earlier in this round. Was kind of surprised Neto went this early in the draft. I understand why he went in this draft. It's justifiable, but at the same time, it just took me by surprise. James Wood went in round 3. I'm like, whoa, makes sense, but it surprised me. The reason I went Adames is you're watching shortstops fly off the board. We saw 2, 4, 6... Man, 8 shortstops or so go in the first 3 rounds, 7 in the first 2 rounds of this draft. I took the 9th shortstop off the board. After Willy Adames, it gets bleak. Tovar, Rafaela, Bichette, Volpe, Tyler Fitzgerald were the next shortstops off the board. Like, those are serviceable middle infielders in my mind, but starting shortstops, Willy Adames bounced back. He's duplicating what we thought was a career. Maybe it could be his, you know, good seasons now. He had a down season in between them, but so I went Willy Adames before the shortstop ledge hit.
Makes a ton of sense. And I mean, one thing I prioritize in these drafts is category balance. And Willie's got 13 steals this year. Not traditionally a stolen base guy, but up that this season. So
real quick, also, like, in the back of my head is when we did our first half reviews and how top heavy shortstop was and how much it dropped off. So that's why I was like quickly in my head going, I need a shortstop in this draft.
All right, so in the 6th round, you went with Nolan Jones. That's Brenton Doyle. In the 6th round. How concerned are you? Because I think the question is for listeners, like, I don't think. I mean, speak out of turn. I don't think we would expect a repeat from Brenton Doyle this year in 2025. What do you think he kind of regresses to? I think that's more so the question.
To me, he's still a 2020 talent. His strikeout rate dropped tremendously this year from previous seasons. He's young, so maybe he doesn't have this great of a season, but could still be a really good season. He plays half his games in Coors, going to play every day because of really good defense. And the biggest thing is that power speed combo, even if the batting average drops, the power speed is going to be there. We saw him even the year before play so bad, still produced tons of steals and decent power. So I'll take Brenton Doyle in the 2020 upside with maybe he's actually is a 275 hitter. And that'd be pretty darn awesome. And could work with that.
No, I think that's the right call. I agree. I don't want to say anyone has a 2020 floor, like few guys are like that, but I think we can pretty confidently project 2020 on Brenton Doyle. It's just what's that batting average going to fall to? But even if it goes to like 240, 250 and just 2020 guy again, and like you said, could stick a 270 given his age and the improvement in strikeout rate. So I won't go too hard on you for that one, but I did have to throw the Nolan Jones comp in
there. I've heard it. Yeah, it's fair. It.
7 and 8. I love these two picks. You went starting pitcher. You went Bryce Miller in the 7th and Justin Steele in the 8th, which pardon the pun, but that was a steal in the 8th. I think Justin Steele is like a legit SP2 borderline 1. Were those smashes? Were those easy calls?
Yes. When I looked at Bryce Miller with the improvements we've seen this year, it's kind of the way we thought of, I think to me at least, the way we thought of Gilbert and Kirby in recent years. Bryce Miller starting to put that together a bit. He's actually throwing innings. Strikeouts are awesome. You guys know me enough on this show. I prefer strikeout pitchers. Bryce Miller is one of them. So that is a good combo with Zach Wheeler. And then Justin Steele, I've always been a Steele guy. To have him as my SP3, I agree. He's an SP1, maybe 2 in a lot of formats. He missed a chunk of the season, so for anybody looking at projections or ratings or raters, whatever, he fell a bit in those, and he's been great since he's returned. So, Bryce Miller, Justin Steele is my 2-3. I'm pretty pumped on that.
Yeah, I do need to commend you on that rotation with Wheeler, Bryce Miller, and Justin Steele as your 3 starters. On paper, which is all we have to go with here, looks pretty damn sweet. So I would trade my rotation for yours. I like yours better than mine.
Yep, that's fair.
9th round, Jake McCarthy, another kind of, I want to say buy high, but because he's done this before. But were you just trying to go get bags here? Do you think there's another step for McCarthy?
I think there's a 15 home run bat there with 25, 30 steals potentially. And if for some reason they shake things up and keep him at the top of the order in that lineup in the future, because it's still a team that's going to have Walker and Marte and some other guys there, that I think McCarthy, another floor pick in round 9 to solidify an outfield with Tucker, Doyle, and McCarthy. That gives me a lot of power, speed, hopefully average, and runs scored from the outfield position. Just kind of balancing things out.
And then you think you threw everyone off in the 11th round, the last pick.
Yeah.
Because you announced it as a homer pick, and I think everyone thought you were going to take Elliot Ramos.
Yeah.
But you went with Tyler Fitzgerald. You're obviously high on what you've seen from him. You watch a ton of Giants games. The obvious question is, like, how legit is this kind of small sample run he's been on, as impressive as it has been?
I saw him flashing leather again tonight, so the more he plays great defense, makes me feel even better about it for next year to be the starting shortstop for the Giants. The speed, I've always said, is where it's at, and he's finally showcased that the last few weeks, which has been great. Mm-hmm. The power is very good. At worst, it's a 15 to 20 home run guy with upside, but a full season of Fitzgerald just running the bases, like, he has 40 steal potential. Like, he has that in him. So to me, I'm thinking, okay, this is a 20-30 guy with upside potentially. Hits 250, like Doyle. He's the Brenton Doyle of the infield essentially. And so I'm hitting on these guys, and the ability to have all these stolen bases locked up now, I can go fill in depth elsewhere and power here, you know, whatever else, get a bunch of spec saves. There's a lot of wiggle room, especially as bad as first base and other positions are that I did not take care of. I'll take a ton of these power speed guys early on.
And then two-parter, what's your least favorite pick? And then kind of what you asked me, what are you looking to address as we restart this thing in October?
My least favorite pick, it's really not. No, I'd rather have Betts than Tucker. I really would. It's either that or the Jake McCarthy pick. I could probably have done a few different things than Jake McCarthy, but it's one of those, like, I've tried to stick to my guns on. Like, if there's certain players I'm looking at or a position I'm looking at and players go, don't force the position. Keep taking the best available to me or something in that realm to build my team, and we'll address positions later. So if you don't want the top pick, I'll say Jake McCarthy. I probably could have you know, I think I still take Jake over Saya, even though I like Saya a lot. I could see the argument for Saya. But, I think Jake McCarthy, if I had to pick one of those.
All right.
I know most will point to Fitzgerald. What's an 11th round pick? Like, really? What are we doing?
Yeah. Yep. Yep.
So, and what I need to work on, I have no first baseman, and first base sucks. Every time I wanted to take one, the guy went a pick or two ahead of me. And so I said I wasn't forcing the envelope there. And it just got worse and worse and worse in that regard. So we're stuck with this right now and looking at guys like Paul Goldschmidt and Yandy Diaz and other murky situations, to say the least.
How comfortable are you not taking a catcher?
Very comfortable. I know the position pretty well. It drops off this year, where now a lot of them feel like they're kind of how the pitching blob was last year, where there's like a group that all feels the same. Now we're in that little world of catcher where I'll just get a couple in the next 10 rounds or so, and I'll go to battle with that. And then I'll probably end the draft with four catchers instead of three. I'll take two late darts. Like last year, I took an Austin Wells in almost every league late. That's been pretty cool. I'll take darts like that later on. So we'll see. Like Uncle Ted keeps mentioning Adrian Del Castillo. The question is, Uncle Ted,
yeah,
I mean, Moreno is still the catcher there. Like, as much as I love Del Castillo as well, who's to say, has Gabriel Moreno just deceased? Like, I'm confused on that one, but I just want to throw that out there. He's mentioned it a million times.
Yeah.
But a couple questions in the chat here before we move on to the next section. Anthony says, how are you going to feel in February when Bryce and Steele are going like five rounds earlier, Bubba? I'm going to feel great, but it won't matter if the team doesn't do anything.
So that's the funny thing. That's the fallacy of this draft. Like, you're thrilled when you see like ADP next spring is before where you took these guys. It means absolutely nothing.
Yeah. Kevin Hastings was curious if where Steele would go. I was looking for, where did it go? Because this is a common thing I've heard as well. It looks like it got erased, unless I missed it. Smotto was in here a second ago. There it is. Fitz reminds me a ton of Geloff in 2023. I've heard that as well. The only hopes I'm getting with Fitz is A's hitting at the top of the order, not the bottom of the order, which is pretty sweet. And we've seen a better strikeout rate than Geloff. It's still high. It's like 25 to 27% of late. But when we're talking Geloff, we're talking a 35% strikeout guy. Like, that's a pretty dramatic difference to me.
Yeah, and Geloff's plate approach is – I've not seen much of Fitz, but Geloff's plate approach is brutal.
And then here's another one. Anthony says, with how bad first base is looking depth wise, do you think Casas, Naylor, Vinny P, etc., could get a round or two boost once new draft startup? I do, but what do you think, Ryan?
I don't know, but probably. But I also think we trick ourselves into thinking a position is weak or strong, just because, I mean, these players are so hard to project anyway. I don't know. I think they'll be more focused on closers and getting starting pitchers. I think those guys will rise up as opposed to position players.
That's fair as well. All right, let's just do a quick hitter here, Ryan. We're going to go team by team, just real quick. Most surprising pick by each team. It could be a good, bad, the ugly, however you want to say it. But we'll start with Steve Weimer. What was your most surprising pick from a guy that just continues to put a masterclass together in drafting?
Yeah, I this has probably been coined already, but Steve Weimer is like the silent assassin. Just did not say much during the Zoom, but just like, destroyed us with picks. I'd probably say most surprising was probably Robbie Ray in the seventh. I just, you know, I don't know about the strikeouts are huge. Strikeouts are king. That seemed a tad early, but Steve knows a ton more than me. But that was probably the surprising one. Seeing Ketel Marte second was also surprising, but fully justified.
Yeah, I'm guessing the Ray thing was a strikeout upside pick. Same with Rodon. Yep. Surprising to me, and not because it's a great pick, the fact Wyatt Langford went in round 11 after all these other young guys like Jackson Merrill went in round 4, and you know, maybe rightfully so, but I don't think Wyatt Langford deserved that kind of drop either. So that that stood out as a very, like, of course Steve Weimer got Wyatt Langford in round 11. That's just fitting for this. So yeah, yep, that one for sure.
That was awesome.
What do you think about Fish in round 2 with his Yellowbeck Road?
Yeah, so the most surprising picks were really his entire second through sixth round. So the running joke of this draft, so this league has been together for 3 years, and it's basically all the same owners, same exact owners as last year. John Fish is in third. I'm in fourth currently in this league, but Fish is not going to finish third because he has too many injured starting pitchers and will not hit his innings minimum of 950 innings. So Fish did in this draft, and everyone's just laughing at him. He went Kirby in the second, and Devin Williams in the third, but then Framber Valdez, Aaron Nola, and Michael King, 4, 5, and 6. So I think addressed innings quite appropriately. And honestly, I don't think went overboard with it. Like, I think this is certainly a viable strategy in DCs. You can backfill with a ton of mid-round bats, and that can work. But it was just hilarious seeing Fish just name like bulk starter after bulk starter. Especially because we're all giving him crap for not hitting his innings limit this season. That was fantastic.
Yep, he stuck to his guns on that one. The surprising pick, but could pay off, is the Christian Yelich one. That's either a great value because it fell, or this back issue is just going to keep lingering because, yeah, he's having surgery, but with backs, that doesn't even solve the whole problem sometimes. So that's one of those that's either going to be an amazing pick, or it's going to be like, God, like it was. It's probably worth the risk. That's the thing. It's worth the risk. But it could bounce back. Like, would you rather have had Wyatt Langford archetype situation and then a Yelich? So that'll be a fun one to see. But again, that's the beauty. We're trying not to tear people down more. Just kind of, this guy fell here. This is kind of surprising stuff. Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Bloomfield, round 3. So biggest surprise. You don't get to give yourself a surprise.
Yeah, we just talked about my team. We're good.
Yeah.
We're good.
I'm going to tell you what's the most surprising pick for me was, though, for team 3. I'm going to say it was Tyler Stevenson, because I did not see that one coming. That's all I'm going to say. I was just kind of surprised. Not that he might not be a bad pick, just didn't see that one coming in from you. Team 4, who was James Anderson, another great draft. So what was your surprising pick here? I'll just say mine was Zach Neto. I've talked about him every show so far.
I know.
Every show.
that was surprising to see Zach Neto in the fifth. Totally get it, given the age, given the 2020. It's just, again, that kind of recalibration of getting these young guys. These young guys are getting pushed up. There will be some other surprise picks later that kind of fall in this category, but yeah, Zach Neto in the fifth round was surprising, yet fully justified. Especially, I mean, if listeners are kind of using this draft as building blocks, I mean, James Anderson knows prospects, these young guys, like the back of his hand. So, in my other drafts this off season, like, I'm more confident in Zach Neto because James took him in the fifth.
Yep, I just wanted to see where Zach would go, and people point to the counting stats. Well, he spent too long at the bottom of the order because of Ron Washington. Mm-hmm. So if that changes, hitting in front of Trout next year or something, that could even make him even more valuable. Team 5, Mike Maker, who was your surprising pick there?
Surprising pick for Team Maker, I will go – that's a tough one. I will go Nico Hoerner in the 10th round.
Yeah,
you're kind of banking on it's similar to my Rosarena play in the seventh round. You're banking on the 2023 version of Hoerner. Not even that. I mean, that's 10th round, so it's a little bit of a discount. You're just banking on that rebound from Nico, which certainly could happen, but it's been tough sledding for him this year.
He had Hoerner to Mager in the 10th, and the next pick was Simeon to Anderson. So there's two guys that fell quite a bit this time around. I'll say Max Fried, just because that's where he deserves probably to go now, but to see Max Fried going around 9 is pretty wild to me. That's I thought Justin Steele in the 8th was pretty big. Fried in the 9th, that was another one that fell quite a bit. So interesting there. Kenyon, team 6, Ryan.
I'll go Yamamoto. In the 5th round for this one, just because it was the first pitcher on that team, and B, it just goes against, you know, my mindset going into the draft. Again, we're fooling ourselves thinking we can predict starting pitcher injuries at this point. I always go back to the Merrill Kelly IL stint of earlier this year. We thought he was rock solid and just wasn't. But it went against kind of the, you know, drafting someone currently injured as a starting pitcher. Yamamoto was off my board for that reason. But again, a 2 or 3 round discount from where Yamamoto was going in mains last March. So certainly can work out if Yamamoto stays healthy.
Yeah, it's three starting pitchers, Yamamoto in the fifth, Gallen in the 10th, Luis Eel in the 11th. That's either going to be some amazing value or a very interesting starting three. My one is just, I want to point out Jackson Churio with the middle of round three. He's going to be our second round pick in the draft, folks. Just get used to that. Like, it's not going to be three for long. Watching him tonight against the Giants on Tuesday night, broke a piece of the scoreboard in center field on a home run, like a 464-foot home run off of Logan Webb. This kid's a freak. Like, he's getting better and better as the season goes on. I think he's still 20, actually. So I am going to call him a kid. So, round three, Jackson Churio, that's not going to last a whole lot longer.
Definitely one of those get used to it picks, because it's going to happen and it makes sense.
Yep. Team seven, Rob D. Pietro Ryan.
I would go, I'd go the combo of DeGrom and Joe Ryan at the 3-4, similar to, you know, what I just said about Yamamoto. These two could certainly pay off, especially DeGrom. If DeGrom comes back in September and looks good, the velocity's there. DeGrom will not be going in the third round if he has a good spring and finishes this season strong. But again, like, contrasting DeGrom and Joe Ryan to my maybe safer, we don't know, not as high of a ceiling, Logan Gilbert, Imanaga. It's all about risk tolerance. So just surprising in the terms of, like, something I wouldn't do, but certainly could work out. But seeing those two guys go back to back and at the 3-4 were the surprises for me. Had no clue where DeGrom was going to go entering the draft. And now we have that ADP anchored here.
I just want to throw out Luis Garcia in round nine. I love the pick. Actually, that's who I would have taken over Jake McCarthy if he had fallen to me. Luis Garcia having a great season for the Nationals at second base. He went before Xander Bogaerts, Nico Hoerner, and Marcus Semien. By no means am I saying that's wrong. I'm just saying, kind of like Churio, might need to get used to it type situations here. So get with Luis Garcia.
And Anthony in the chat, I think, summarizes the DeGrom pick really well. DeGrom in the third is so ridiculous to think right now, but the foresight could be amazing.
Yep, agreed. Team eight, who's the surprise pick to you, Ryan?
You know, a lot of them, but
Tyler Fitzgerald, bro.
I'll go Doyle. I'll go Doyle or McCarthy.
That's fair.
I think you're running some buying on a career year risk, but we'll see.
All right, team nine, Ryan Roof, the sticker machine. What do you have for him?
Most surprising on this one was Felix Bautista in the third round. A little bit of a backstory here. Ryan Roof picked Felix Bautista in the second round last year in August when Felix Bautista was healthy and then blew out his arm, like, I want to say, like, a week later. So that was brutal. Ryan only gets a one-round discount on Felix Bautista this season despite coming, you know, missing the entire year. That said, probably the best closer in baseball if he's healthy and Felix Bautista's already throwing, like I have and will have the job in Baltimore. So I get it. It's just surprising to take a third round guy who hasn't pitched this year. I mean, for the same reasons I just said to DeGrom.
I'm going to say Tyler Glasnow falling to round four.
Yeah.
Yeah. He's got the forearm or elbow or whatever right now. He's supposed to come back in a couple of weeks. Maybe we'll see. So maybe it's something more serious. Maybe that's why he fell. But, like, if we knew he was still healthy and not on the IL, realistically, Glasnow, you could argue, as a second-round pick based on this board, third round for sure. So the fact he fell to the middle of round four, I thought was a pretty sweet one as well. Like
the roof pitching. Go ahead. Sorry.
Like Glasnow or DeGrom?
God, that's so hard. But, you know, yeah. Glasnow is currently on the IL, so I can't, like.
Oh, I know. But they basically almost went a full round apart. That's why it's just interesting. That's the fun of these drafts.
It is.
Again, we're not making fun of any pick. It's just kind of the fun back and forth of it all.
And these are like, and it's easy to look at a board now. And I'm kind of meant to say this at the top. It's so easy to look at a board after the fact. This draft is like impossible when we're actually in the room and trying to throw off guys off basically blank sheets. So, certainly not throwing shade at any of these picks. I know I've had some duds. One thing on the roof pitching staff, dude, could be a Skeens, Glasnow, Strider.
Yeah.
Ober. Insane. Could be crazy if that works out.
Dom's team 10. What's the most surprising pick to you here? Mine's taking Rafael Devers over Royce Lewis. That was Dom's go-to guy, Royce Lewis. So I'm going to mention that a few times just to poke Dom, because Dom can take it.
Dom got out ahead of this situation in the chat. He says, I know what's coming my way. Jason Dominguez.
Yes.
Who Dom took in the ninth round. Dom says, I think he plays center field every day next year when Verdugo and or Soto sign somewhere else. Plus, I needed the speed. So nice to get that context from Dom in the chat. I will go outside of Jason Dominguez. I'll go Chris Sale. I really like the pick in the third round. It was just another one of those, like, where is this guy going to go? I mean, likely Cy Young guy who has shown he can now pitch through an entire season and pitch healthy and pitch extremely well. So I like the pick. I was actually considering, like, if Logan Gilbert got picked before me, if Kirby and Gilbert went like the 2-3, I probably would have taken Chris Sale at the beginning of the third round. So can't say I'm like super surprised, but it was one of those things coming into the draft. Like, where is Chris Sale going to go?
Yeah. For me, I was looking at William Contreras, Jackson Chourio, Royce Lewis, and Chris Sale in round three. And Lewis felt him. Yeah. I was about to go Wheeler Sale back to back if that's how it all fell together. So I get it. Waxman, Zach Waxman, team 11.
I would say the Shane McClanahan in the sixth round. And then when you pair it with, like, he had Sandy Alcantara in the 11th round, which I think is a great pick in a vacuum. I think you just need to have a little bit more stability, again, quote unquote stability. We don't know which pitchers are stable at this point, but the McClanahan and then backing that up with Alcantara later was surprising to me.
Yeah, McClanahan, I'm just curious of, it's already got two TJ surgeries. He's like 23 or 24 years old. Like, it's not even that old yet. So that's a bit concerning for me, but could be totally wrong there. Ryan Venancio, team 12. I'll go on this one first here. I love Jackson Merrill in round four. Don't expect that much longer, folks. That's another one that's going to climb up when he wins NL Rookie of the Year. So have fun there. But I think Logan Webb falling to round six, just in a, especially in a DC, the floor that Logan Webb brings to a pitching staff, that's pretty sweet. Consider you go Scooble and take four bats and then get Webb as your SP2. That's pretty nice.
Yep, I think I took Logan Webb in the fourth round. I don't know, last year, but he's on my current team in this league. For me, it was the next pitcher that Ryan took, which is Brandon Woodruff in the seventh round. Again, common theme, hate to kind of beat a dead horse here, but where are these starting pitchers going who haven't pitched at all this season? And we kind of got an early read on that with Woodruff in the seventh. Honorable mention real quick to Jackson Merrill, which I thought was an awesome pick in the fourth. I think that's going to rise as Jackson Merrill continues to demolish baseballs down the stretch.
Jay Kolesker, team 13. He started with J-Rod and Corbin Carroll, which could, on paper, turn out to be legendary stuff. What was your surprise pick for Jake's team?
I mean, that was the surprise, is going Julio, Corbin Carroll. It's similar. I think it's similar to what I did last year with Judge and Turner. I mean, Julio and Carroll were both top five picks this year. So I don't know. Who are you more confident in that duo returning to previous glory, Julio and Carroll?
Probably Corbin Carroll, weirdly enough. At least I've seen some of it this year. I haven't seen anything with J-Rod. It's been depressing to watch. Yeah.
That combo, really not just one pick, but that combo to start off is super fascinating at 1-2.
Yep. The one for me, Taj Bradley in round nine, that could turn out to be really, really good. Or depends on which Taj Bradley we get, but that could be pretty intriguing in round nine. Jason DuPont, team 14, Ryan.
Oh, let's see. I'll go. I don't know. Pretty good squad.
It's a good team. It's a really good team.
I'll go Bo Bichette in the eighth.
That's
just fire. It's just a wild card. That could be a top three round pick. Could be, if Bo Bichette does what he did this year, terrible. But you're banking on the positive rebound there at an age where, you know, I can't sit here and say Randy Rosarena pick and not, you know, top. I think Bichette's kind of in that same boat, even younger, I believe. So. Surprising, but I like the pick from Mr. DuPont.
Yeah, I think it's tough to decide which one. I guess I'd say Michael Harris in round four, just because of the fall and then the other guys that are available in the outfield. But yeah, tough to pick apart anything on this one. He's one of the two teams with two catchers right now. And then Jenny Butler in team 15. I know how hard it is to be at the end here. I thought she did some really, really fun. Garrett Crochet in round six could be absolutely ridiculous.
Yeah, I think that could be one of the top ADP winners comparing this draft to where Crochet goes next year. I would say most surprising pick in this one, I think, has to be James Wood, right? Yes, just seeing James Wood at the it's a 3-4, it's a third round, but 3-4 turn, so 45th overall. I mean, James Wood has been quite impressive in his first go around in the majors, so could work. Just surprising to see James Wood that high in drafts. I wasn't sure where he would go. Felt like fourth, fifth was maybe a little bit more, but again, Jenny's on the turn. You need your guy. You want James Wood. You have to take him at the 3-4 turn, because I doubt he was coming back at the 5-6.
Yep, for sure. I'm going to hit on a couple things in the chat. I'm going to try to catch up on some of these really quickly here. Anthony said, is three rounds more valuable than Tovar, four rounds more than Volpe? So I guess it's the whole, it must have been a shortstop question at some time. I like Smata's point here, Xavier Edwards over Nico Horner. Xavier Edwards did not get drafted, so that's a fun one as well. He'll get drafted probably pretty early when we kick things back up. Michael C. says Neto is eighth at shortstop and 23rd. Tovar doesn't run and Volpe lacks pop, but that's a big gap. So I think that's what they're talking about, Neto versus Tovar versus Volpe. Do you have any thoughts on that?
No, good. Covered it well in the chat there. Volpe's tough to nail down. I think I'd go Tovar over Volpe. I think we got that right in the ADP, but I don't know.
Smata did mention Luis Garcia is still platoon, right? Yes, he weirdly is. It's like a, feels like it's like 65-35. It's not a full 50-50, but it's too much for sure. That's what is quite annoying in that situation. Anything else here that stands out? Schwell also, Smata also thinks Schwell and Bach's going to go higher. I think that is a possibility as well. Anthony K says Schwell and Bach in the 10th, another Braves gem of an arm. I agree. That could be fun as well. Santander could be a gift in this draft. I know you mentioned that, I believe, in another forum at some point. I can't remember, but it sounds familiar, Ryan.
So Schwellenbach went in the 10th round, just for some context there, which I thought was awesome. And then Santander went in the 8th round. Like, I'd much rather have, I guess he wasn't available when I took Bellinger the following round, but like, would much rather have Santander or is that Brian Reynolds, who went in the 8th before my Cody Bellinger in the 9th, but whatever.
Anthony says, I took Julio in the first of our TGFBI league, Bubba. I know all too well how little we've seen Julio. Yeah, it's been a rough go there. And other than that, I think that's pretty much all of those. Okay, just a couple more quick hitters we'll do here. Best undrafted players, Ryan. We were talking about we were just kind of going off the player rater before, the top pitchers, Lugo, top hitters, Profar, probably not the best ones. But who stands out to you, as we had quite the list we chatted about before the show?
Yeah, so on the hitter side, I'll go Jackson Holliday.
Yes, 100%.
Just surprised he didn't go. Along the similar lines of the Wyatt Langford pick from Steve Weimer, just makes a ton of sense, especially if you've built a stable start to the draft. That's about the time in the draft where I like to start taking some shots, both literally and with my picks.
Yep.
On the pitcher side, I'll go Kevin Gausman. I thought real, real hard about Kevin Gausman in the 11th round. But I pulled up his page. Like, I remember pulling this page up in the middle of the draft, and it's ugly, and it's like getting worse. I think he had a good start recently, but when I pulled it up in the draft, it was like, God, these second half skills from Gausman, velocity down, splitter depends on the fastball. That's all he's got. He's older. Like, it could really pay off taking a 12th round Kevin Gausman, but these guys can break apart very quickly as well. So I still think Gossman's one of the better. Like, I think he'll go in the 12th round unless he gets hurt or something. But yeah, surprised to see him not picked.
Yeah, those are two I'd completely agree with. A couple others that stood out, like Bryce Terang and his stolen bases has been huge. Like, pitching wise, you mentioned Gausman. There's Ranger Suarez. There's Ronel Blanco, who had his big hit, Ranger Suarez for sure. And then there's like the blobs of like the Eovaldis of the world. Elliot Ramos did not get drafted. He should be going pretty quick off the board. So, and then Goldie. Goldie was another tough one. The way Gausman was tough for you, Goldie was tough as well, with the need of first base out there. That stood out in a big way too. Thoughts on the closers run real quick, because I think this might be here to stay for draft season, at least DC draft season. Again, 10 closers were taken in rounds 3 and 4. There were 2 more taken in round 5. Final 6 rounds, there was 1 taken. So, or 2 more taken, sorry. So what are your thoughts on basically the meat of the closers getting taken in 2 rounds?
I think it's just a supply and demand thing. There are like 10 to 12 closers that we think are legit closers, and there's 15 teams. So like that math doesn't really add up. And in this draft, pretty much 12 of the 15 teams took a closer in those like first 5 rounds. So it's just a supply and demand thing. And one of the things I looked up, you know, entering this, one of my blind spots is who's going to be a free agent. I mentioned Clay Holmes at the outset, but like, I think we had a comment earlier about, you know, why wasn't Kirby Yates taken? He's a free agent as well. You just don't know where these guys are going to land next year. So you really need that combination of skills, have the role and still be on the same team. It's just so hard, damn hard to project that the ones that we are confident in, those guys are going to go super early. So I think what we'll see kind of later on in draft season, we'll see the closer start to get pushed down and the starting pitchers kind of take their place as we, you know, as you get later into draft season, you're a bit more confident in starting pitcher health.
Yep, no doubt about it. So that'll make things interesting because there's still a lot of starters out there, a lot of outfielders out there. So that brings me to my, I hate using the word positional scarcity right now because like we kind of went so blind to this. There's a lot of guys we missed that might have changed the way certain positions might have been drafted, this, that, and the other. But like I'm thinking like, I guess, overall talent at the position. Shortstop drops off pretty quick. First base drops off pretty quick. Any other positions did you notice that, you know, I know a lot will change by the time we draft again for Gladiator season and whatnot, but that'll make your kind of attention change on draft season?
We don't really know. And again, this was just one draft. It was interesting, I think, to see a plethora of outfielders go like late in this draft. There were 7 in the 11th round, 5 in the 9th, 4 in the 8th. There were a lot of outfielders available in kind of those 8 through 11 rounds. I feel like the worst position was second base. Like look at the orange or the lack thereof. On this draft board, it was brutal. It was Ketel Marte in the 2nd round, and then Albies and Altuve in the 5th, and then Matt McClain, who hasn't really played this year, in the 7th. My Westberg, like, dude, that is horrendous.
Yep.
So,
and I guess that also highlights one thing we're used to: not a whole lot of multi-position flexibility in the early rounds compared to what we're used to in DCs. That's such a premium thing. So I guess we'll see how it plays out in the following rounds, but a lot of that flexibility goes out the window. That makes you have to, when you roster construct, you know, 50 rounds, we talk usually taking 23 to 25 pitchers, give or take, some more, some less, and then you can usually take more pitchers when you have more flexibility in your positions offensively, and might not have that luxury this year.
Great. So, we've got Michael Garcia, second base eligible. That is correct. Michael Garcia is second, or 25 games of second base. So there you go. Kevin in the chat mentioned that.
Yep.
A resident Royals fan.
So any final thoughts on the draft board? We're supposed to hopefully pick things up in October once the season's over, do, you know, probably 11 to 15 more rounds before just going full slow draft after that. So what's your thoughts on where we stand at this point in time? What's it like playing for second?
I mean, Yeah, no, I have nothing particularly enlightening at this point. It was this does kind of feel like just from a enjoyment standpoint, this almost feels like a home league at this point, because we all get on Zoom. We're all on there at the same time. And there's no draft software. We're just calling out our picks. And I don't know, in this online world we're in, it's nice to have a semi home league vibe. And I'm looking forward to, kind of looking forward to the next wave of this. I'm not looking forward to freaking constructing a list of players for rounds 12 through whatever in October, but we signed up for it, so
that's what we do. All right, got a couple listener questions here on the old the Twitter bot. Calling My Shot says, as we head into the last month, what are some of the real life baseball things that have the biggest effect on fantasy? The two that he's thought about were aggressive prospect call-ups without risk of losing rookie status, expanded rosters leading to diluted saves, increased platoons. So what's your thoughts on things that have affected fantasy the most this year?
I think the big thing is in this final month is going to be starting pitcher workloads. Starting to see it already. you're going to see a lot of these, especially like the back half of September, where if you're trying to get wins, a lot of starting pitchers are going to go like 3-4 innings, get shut down, go five or something. It's really hard to get a win when you five and dive. So I think that's trying to make up wins in September is, I wouldn't wish that on anybody.
Yep. Nope. I think it's definitely the workload and the just overall thought on the season, way more platooning every year. Like, it's been crazy. So The old adage of at bats, it's like, that's why you make fun of the Minnesota line change and others. It's almost like if the team plays seven games and you get five games, that's a good week. Yep. And that used to not be the case. So you make the mindset change as things goes on as well. All right. We got MS, everybody at SMMS79. Bubba, can you talk about the Doyle pick? I did that quite a bit. I have him as a keeper option in a home league, but it's the same league where I drafted Nolan Jones. Is this a guy you like a lot, or was this more of a soft buy? I like him a lot more than Nolan Jones, let's put it that way. Ryan Roof says, who was the most surprising pick of the draft for each of you? We talked about that. Biggest reach.
Biggest reach. Yeah, he's going to make us call someone out.
Man. Yep, that's what they want here. Biggest reach. So let me look at the top of the draft board here. That would make it a reach, most likely. Let's see here. Biggest reach. God, it's like, I don't want to call it a reach, but honestly, Felix Bautista without even throwing a pitch scares the crap out of me.
Yeah, throw it back on Roof.
Yeah, Felix Bautista. Throw it back at
him. Biggest reach.
Like, I get it, but that scares the heck out of me.
And some context to that pick, though, Jenny Butler in the Zoom said she would have taken Felix Bautista at the 3-4 turn. So in hindsight, Ryan was not getting Felix Bautista back in the fourth. But yeah, we'll go with that. We'll go with a third round pitcher who hasn't thrown a pitch this season.
Let's go. Yeah, I get it. I get the appeal if he comes back fully ready to rock and roll, but that scares me. And then he says, name one player that someone else drafted that made you say, oh, that happened a few times in this draft, but one for me for sure later in the draft, because I was looking for a first baseman. I thought Jake Berger was going to fall to me in round 9. I thought he'd kind of get overlooked a bit, especially with Fish already having Christian Walker, and he went and took Jake Berger. So that stung, because Berger's first base, third base. So I wanted that.
Yeah, that's huge. I'll say Cal Raleigh. I felt like that kind of forced my hand into maybe a panic pick on Tyler Stevenson one round later. Like, I think you might agree. I don't know. I feel like there's a big gap between Cal Raleigh and Tyler Stevenson, yes. And they went in the 9th and 10th round. So I'll go with that.
That's fair. Heath Cap says just some stud outfield buys in the last round. So yeah, yes. A lot of outfielders out there for sure. Jenny Butler says she got sniped on Hader and Suzuki. So got that going. Anthony K, he's in the chat and on Twitter here. Here we go. Okay, so first off, Ryan, you're not afraid. Well, he asked this question, I think, in the chat, but you're not afraid of locking in Ozuna the utility position? Any concerns they don't pick up the option?
Yeah. No, and no. He'll be Ozuna on the Braves again next year.
And then Bubba, no worries over Lewis and his injuries in round 3. I kind of mentioned how I addressed that. And how happy are you going to be in February when Bryce Miller is going 2-3 rounds higher, 100% there? And then he also says, how comfortable are you with Crochet and Senga as your top two? Oh, that was for Jimmy Butler. Never mind. I am an idiot. So Jenny can answer that. Ben Tidd said, the names are cut off for me, so I can't tell which team is which. But, man, whoever took Jordan Westberg in round 8 is printing money already.
Pick of the draft, really.
Looks like I need a new co-host on Monday. Yep. Michael Cicchini says, particularly liked your Westberg and Bubba's Doyle picks, but like God abandoning his own son, Jesus, you each took lesser outfielders in Arozarena and McCarthy over Saya, who's at 275 now with 19 homers and 11 steals. We have been huge today, guys. I agree. But
I'll push back on the I would take Randy Arozarena over Saya Suzuki next season. I just say Suzuki and his obliques like needs to show he can stay healthy for a full season. However, in hindsight, I would probably go Suzuki over Cody Bellinger, who I took earlier in the 9th round. So I'll give Michael that one, but not Randy. I think Randy, I personally like that one.
Then Cedar is Paribus says, what's up with Julio Rodriguez at pick 13? he's falling, and I was almost thinking he might fall around too. So I wouldn't be surprised if you see that. His production's been bad, and there's a lot of talented players in the first few rounds.
Yeah, that's, you know, whenever you can fade a 23-year-old former number one prospect who's already gone 30-30 in the majors, I think you could do it. No, I'm being facetious. I wonder if Julio's – I think there's a little hidden injury going on there. I don't know if he's been fully healthy this season.
That would make a lot more sense. It makes me feel better about things. Anthony also says, will any of FPAS be live on YouTube or have some videos from –
Yeah. So there, last year we did do, there was a full video production with some like panning to the audience. So if that stays, yeah, for the podcast room, all the live podcasts, will definitely be available in podcast form. And last year they were all available on the Baseball HQ YouTube channel. So, the podcast themselves, yes, but not the actual
conference
panels and things like that.
Yeah. Then Michael C. says, Bubba, who are the catchers you're thinking about for rounds
12 there we go. 20? Yep.
So you want me to give all this up here live on air? This is where we're going?
Hold on. Let me get my stone tablet here. Hold on.
Yeah.
I got a cough drop wrapper. Let me write these names down on this.
Got a cough. You see what I'm dealing with here, people? This is the kind of friendliness I get here. Let me just pull up a list of catchers here because I have some off the top of my head, but I wouldn't want to speak out of turn here for
Hopefully
you.
There's not a catcher named Ricola. I picked the wrong one here. But
trouble there. Let me just I'd love Adrian Del Castillo, but we're not going to go there. Guys I'm looking at here pretty soon. I was looking at I'm still a believer in Ryan Jeffers, but Travis d'Arnaud would be a dude. Shea Langeliers, if I can believe the batting average gets better, I think that's a real pick. Joey Bart actually should be the dude there, so that is kind of enticing in Pittsburgh. There's a handful of them. I'm not going to name every team's catcher, but there will be quite a few that I think are still very serviceable as we keep going through the draft. Let's put it that way.
That was at least enough to end with two of them. Yeah, that was another issue I had with the Stevenson pick. I don't know if Stevenson differentiates himself. I was looking at that exact list when I was scrambling in the 10th round to pick him. So
that's why I wasn't forcing it. Once the certain guys went, I'm like, I'm just going to sit back and attack other positions at this point in time. That was
why you're better at this than I am, man.
Yeah, I wouldn't go that far, my friend. But we're going to wrap it up there. That was a lot of fun talking board here. Beanable says Alejandro Kirk. I agree. Kirk is on that list as well. Just a little farther down, but I still do like Kirk. That was a lot of fun. A lot of fun going through this. Looking forward to drafting some more. And then before you know it, I'll be drafting all the time because that's what I do in the offseason because I have problems. Ryan laughs at me, but it's true. Any final thoughts, Ryan, before we head on out of here?
No, fun show. Super, super active chat. We always appreciate it. I know it's not the best audio sometimes, but it makes these live streams a ton of fun. And again, it's super late at night for some of you all. So appreciate the live comments and chats, even if we didn't get to all of them.
Most definitely. And we'll be back with you guys Thursday night, recording live as usual, dropping on Friday with the Fab preview week 24. And more fun fantasy goodness to finish out the season over the last month of baseball, because next episode will be the last one in August, folks. That tells you we are on the home stretch. So make sure y'all check out Ryan on Twitter at RyanBHQ. I'm on Twitter at BDIntric, the podcast at Bubba Bloom Pod. And this is Bubba and the Bloom, episode 164. Catch y'all next time.